Welcome, everyone. This is Jeff Cohn with the Wall Street Resource. Joining me is Ron Dutt, CEO of Flux Power Holdings. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Jeff.
So, Ron, for those not familiar with Flux Power, can you just give us a quick overview of the company?
Yeah, sure thing, Jeff. At Flux Power, we develop and manufacture large format lithium-ion battery packs for the forklifts of all sizes in the material handling industry, and also the airport ground support equipment, the trucks, scissor lifts, pushbacks that you see on the tarmac when you're sitting in the plane ready to take off. So that's been our focus. We were the first ones to provide UL-listed battery packs of material handling back in 2015. So we've built a lot of experience over the past 11 years of building the product, understanding the industry, and particularly the value proposition, where we are focused on these large fleets like PepsiCo, Delta Airlines, and so forth, that have operations across the U.S. and are looking for somebody to have as good or better technology and particularly as good or better service for ongoing long-term relationships.
Okay. That gives me a couple questions, actually. First off, how big of a market are you addressing?
For material handling, if all the new forklifts in the United States were sold and equipped with lithium ion batteries, that total addressable market for the battery purchase would be $2.5 billion with a B dollars of all those electric forklifts. So it's a very big market, and we are currently, by estimates from a number of sources, about somewhere between 8 and 9% penetration of that market. So it's early days, big market, a number of competitors, but I wish them all well, know most of them, because it's a very, very wide open running field at this point.
Is it pretty fragmented, or is there one real dominant player?
No, there's no 800-pound gorilla. You know, there's probably, depending on how you count it, 8 or 10 competitors. Most of them earlier stage, smaller companies that see the opportunity and are doing the early work, innovative work, to bring these products to market in a way that these fleets demand. So it is a real spectrum. We see new entrants, but there is no one. In fact, the bankers tell us, because a lot of the entrants are private, so you really, there's no reporting of gross registrations like an automotive to determine market share. But the comments have been made, they believe we have more revenue than any of our competitors for the last 12 months.
Okay, and you compete with lithium ion, if I'm correct, and there's alternative ways to go about that problem, right? Hydrogen, et cetera. So where do you fit in there, advantage wise?
Yeah, as a lithium ion provider, the largest competitor by far is lead acid that's being sold for forklifts. And against lead acid, the advantage is that lithium, because of the chemistry, and you've got a computer in the pack to optimize the performance, they can move more pallets, particularly over a 2 or 3 shift operation. And there's a lower product life cycle cost. There's a higher initial cost, but lower lifetime costs because they last longer, and you can use one lithium battery for 3 shifts versus lead acid, where you have to have change batteries each shift. So simply going to hydrogen fuel cell, we hear a lot about that. Most of the activity is with very heavy duty applications with trucks, trains, and so forth, because in the material handling environment, to make the economics work, you need about 150 trucks or so under one roof, and typically greenfield, because there's a large investment in capital equipment for the hydrogen. So hydrogen alternative has been around quite a bit longer than lithium, and all of our top tier companies that we're looking at have looked at it, and a few have used it, such as Amazon and Walmart, but they're typically for the new, very large greenfield facilities. With the advent of lithium, lithium has solved has significantly improved the value proposition versus lead acid. So it's filled that demand and opportunity environment.
Now, do you need customers to have new equipment, or is it a retrofit, or how does this work?
There is no retrofit required. Fortunately, over the last 100 years, the lead-acid environment has standardized the compartment sizes among different forklift makers for the different small, medium, and large varieties of forklifts. So we've been able, knowing that, to design our packs accordingly. And so we can, there's no retrofit required. Now, probably 95% of our current sales are for new forklifts to go in those. However, we had a fair amount where the lead acid reaches its end of life, you just pull it out, drop in our lithium and connect the lead, so there's no retrofit. So I believe that, call it replacement market, is going to continue to grow, particularly as the experience in the industry broadens in terms of the adoption of lithium.
Is the adoption because of cost of ownership over the long haul, or is it for green reasons?
You know, the whole warehouse environment is, I want to say, more akin to a nickel-dime industry versus very, very high margin. So there's a very widespread keen interest in cost reduction. So the attraction to lithium is that the overall product life cycle costs will really, that lithium will provide a cost reduction on that basis. That's the reason all our customers have migrated from lead acid to lithium. As part of that cost reduction is linked to performance, that with lithium, you can move more pallets, there's a longer sustained availability of energy, and the batteries last longer, typically. So it's all wrapped up in that value proposition, which is all driven toward lifetime cost reduction.
And how about protection? Any IP?
Yeah, we have several patents. Granted, three in process for our proprietary firmware and software. We could, like some companies, come up with about 50 or 100 patents, but all those patents typically cost $10,000 apiece. And all I'm concerned about is ones that are really utility patents, we call them, really keen to the business, because the patents typically are not going to protect advances in the technology and industry. In other words, there's hardly been any litigation over that. But what it does signal is, are you developing the algorithms, the the battery management technology that's as good or better than anybody else. Otherwise, because if you're just buying it off the shelf or buying what somebody else has, you're too late to the party, and you don't have the degree of alignment with the variety of demands that these customers are putting on the packs. So that's very central to our value proposition to these big customers, because these big fleets, you need to look at who they're picking, because it's a long-term relationship, and they have to have confidence that we can continue. Technology keeps moving all the time, and it's not what you did last year, it's what you're doing now and working on in the future. And that's why we invest in R&D on technology and are continuing to do so and using partners on that as well.
So I see you have something to do with artificial intelligence. How does that technology help and fit in with this?
Artificial technology is a big umbrella these days, and there's a lot of discussion. You know, it's really viewed as a holy grail for the next really economic surge in the country of what it can do using technology. And I think when you even just Google and do a minimal amount of research, you find that on the one hand, you have a very pure, what they call generative AI that really creates new content in a fantastic way using available data and resources. There's also, on the other end of the umbrella of AI, is really machine learning, where it's, utilizing what people know as big data, utilizing algorithms and data to sort out what's really happening. I mean, what these companies are trying to manage 300 facilities with 30,000 forklifts. How are you going to get command of all that data to make good asset management decisions for your whole fleet, but let alone in each facility that may have different operating situation. So there's a lot of what I call machine learning going on right now. We offer it. Some of our competitors offer it with their firmware and software. And we are working on taking that to the next level, which will identify problems before they're known with the customers and come up with innovative alternative solutions to address that. Our customers using these packs, they all have one goal: eliminate downtime. They just want the batteries to keep running and running and do what they're supposed to do with minimal maintenance and minimal downtime for certain situations that can happen. So the intelligence we're offering is enhancing to the next level the output from our operation, our firmware and software. We send our data to the cloud, and taking that data and that experience, and part of it is the intelligence of knowing all the experience of a wide variety activity over what you should do, and identifying all different kinds of ways of better asset management. For example, you can identify an operator may have one pack that's in very heavy use and is more rapidly reaching its end of life, where another pack in another location, a warehouse, has a much lighter use, and we can switch those batteries and better manage the asset life and asset management for that facility.
So who are you doing this for? What industries or what customers?
Well, if you look at our website, you'll see our customers and our customer page. PepsiCo and the beverage industry and the food industry is a big one for both small and large forklifts. And really, all these industries, they move material, they move stuff, they move product. And to Procter & Gamble, to Electrolux, moving refrigerators, Frito-Lay moving potato chips and snack food. So you think about it. Another way to look at it is if you look around the room, wherever you are, you see that anything there's probably been moved by a forklift two or three times. So the magnitude of the material handling industry is, I believe, underestimated by the average person, and the needs for that, and the scope of the different jobs and industry for that. If you just look at our customer page, you can see the broad spectrum.
Okay, and then how do you reach these customers? What marketing channels?
You know, we're like a lot of other industries. In the complex economy we have today, we use several channels, a number of partners. Our business, our products typically are what we call a B2B to another business that's moving stuff in a warehouse. So it's part, one of the most important parts of the equipment, of the forklift or the airport truck. And so the manufacturer of that equipment is a partner in this because their engineers need to approve our pack, that it works, it fits, any customer unhappiness or issues or liability are ones where both of us get involved. So they're keenly interested in that. And the obvious one is that the manufacturers of material handling, Toyota Material Handling, has global market share. They're our largest partner, and along with particularly the other top 10 manufacturers that we use, have sales forces, national account sales forces that are selling to these customers that we have, these large customers, the forklifts. And so we found the most effective and efficient and timely approach to the market is to collaborate with those national account sales force and the companies and their engineers, that when the customer is interested in lithium or is interested in cost reduction, we have a partnership with them to approach those end customers. And the other party involved in this environment are the equipment dealers, the ones selling the forklifts, dealers spread all over the country, and also separately battery distributors. There's lead acid battery distributors all over the country, and we have some relationships with some of the larger ones as well, who interface with these customers, all wanting to satisfy any needs they have for high performance and lower cost.
So you mentioned all over the country. I assume you're nationwide. I read that you opened up something in Georgia, facility there. Does that give you enough to cover the whole country, or do you have to open more facilities?
The one in Georgia we opened recently in outside Atlanta is a repair and service facility. No, it's not enough to cover the whole country. We have relationships with several other third parties. One of the larger distributor in the country out of Charlotte, who handles pretty much everything east of the Mississippi. Equipment dealer in Cleveland, and we are working to activate some relationships with a dealership in the Pacific Northwest and also in the central U.S. And then on top of that, we have our facility here. We have service facility here, both service and call center. That covers the whole country, and the call center has an office also in Atlanta to particularly ensure that the East Coast time zone is well served. And we have some decentralized service techs across the country as well, because it's extremely important wherever there could be a service need someplace, we can get in there and address it right away. So we have we've been developing quite a network of service techs, training, video, remote virtual training as well to address that, and see that as one of the principal value adds to these customers, along with service packs located in these different spots. So depending on what happens, you can keep those forklifts running.
Now, how about your ability to scale? Are you manufacturing yourself or outsourcing? And where are you capacity-wise?
We are an assembler. We develop, design, firmware, software, circuit boards, all our components, but we don't fabricate them. We largely use fabricators of circuit boards and also providers of steel in California and other parts of the country. But we have a lot here in Southern California, despite what a lot of people's perspective on Southern California. We also source steel from China and have sourcing in Mexico. But we do all the final assembly. So we ship all the parts in here. And by the way, our battery cells are sourced to one of the leading Chinese suppliers of lithium batteries in China, and we have several other backup providers that we are working with as well to cover cover that. We do all the assembly here. We are ISO 9000 certified in our assembly process here. We also are two-thirds of the way through implementing lean manufacturing here at this facility. We are about 50% of total capacity that we could put through here over the on an annual basis. So we're running our, you know, our financials are published, so we just finished past year at $66 million dollars. So we're running about 70, and we feel we could double that at this facility here, adding a full second shift, maybe even a partial third, and with the facility have as well.
And then revenue model, can you touch on that? Gross margins as well?
Yeah, of course, gross margins is a big deal. It's a big differentiator here. We have been publishing in our financials our actual trajectory on gross margin. We have publicly said we expect to be at cash flow break-even this fiscal year, which ends June 30th. And we're tracking very well and consistently on that, particularly going past the pandemic supply chain disruption, and which delayed somewhat our break-even, but it also served to strengthen all of our supply chain processes. So that was the silver lining of that. But we're certainly marching on that, and also with plans as similar to many manufacturing companies like us. Look, we need to have the goal of getting to or close to 40%. So we're pretty confident in that trajectory in doing that, which provides break even and profitability.
And then what are the key drivers that drive those sales?
To drive the revenue and sales, you mean?
Yes.
The big driver is just the demand out there for these large fleets that certainly want to move more pallets on a given day and a lower overall cost reduction. But the third thing is they want to have confidence that the supplier has the resources and capability to support their timetables for delivering, ordering and delivering battery packs, Also, their expectations with regard to service and quality. So you have, it's the classic case of a new emerging innovative product. You have early adopters, and then you have ones that, well, when they see company A, B, C is happy with it, particularly if it's in their industry, and realizing those benefits, and they see that there's suppliers that can really fulfill that, because you get a lot of startup suppliers, and the first thing you do is try to figure out how to technically put something together, and then you move on to service and relationships and a number of other things as part of the overall value proposition to the customer. So we're seeing that continue to grow and grow. In fact, one of the litmus tests or bellwethers is when there's an annual conference for material handling. One year it's in Chicago. This coming year it's in Atlanta, and it alternates. Walk around those trade shows and versus, say, 5 years ago, if you don't have lithium or robotic features on your that you're showcasing, you probably don't have many people at your booth. So it's becoming very, very much widely accepted, widely recognized at this point. So that demand is just continuing to increase and increase for our revenue. So our challenge is to continuing to scale this business to be able to reach out in the sales channels and continue to grow our production and service.
Very good. Now, as we monitor the company over the next 12 months, what are some of the events or catalysts that we should watch for?
Well, you know, the one big one is how are we doing on our cash flow break-even and growth and profitability, I think, is to keep an eye on, because, as you know, in the sector, the business, in the business phase of the business cycle we're in and the sector we're in, if you're not profitable, your share price is discounted quite a bit, to state the obvious. So I think as we move into profitability, then also, you know, organically you can grow so fast, and the real reality is with the aggressive strategy we have nationwide, Fortune 100 companies and staying on top of particularly technology, you need partnerships. So it's also key to look at a company. What are the other leverage points you have to build scale? Part for us, it's our strategy to build scale, to really cater to, be a leader in the adoption of lithium by these Fortune 100 and 500 companies with large fleets.
So, Ron, before we go, what's the takeaway that you want to leave investors?
Well, I certainly want to point out that while most of us will look at our news feeds or the media and be very captivated by what's happening in automotive EV space with Tesla et al, it's fascinating. I spent my first 12 years of my career at Ford Motor Company at the headquarters, so I can tell you, we used to sit around and just count how many times Ford was mentioned in the Wall Street Journal. But there's certainly a fascination with that. But I think when you turn to material handling and even the GSE equipment and some of the other related adjacencies that we're looking at that are certainly appropriate, the business opportunities and the transformation of these industries with our innovative products is particularly exciting. And as an investor, if you're an investor, I think you have a great opportunity to that you should be looking at. As a customer, you really have something that you're going to have to get on board with sooner or later in some way, because the value propositions is there and is being vetted continually by a number of companies. While there's always speed bumps in innovation, we've seen it with EVs, but the story with us, fortunately, we don't need charging stations as one, you know, one of their big speed bumps, and we're selling our product without any government incentives and to provide that value to the customer and then, of course, to ourselves.
Very good. Well, Ron, thanks so much for sharing the Flux Power story.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff, for the time and the opportunity to talk about Flux.
Thank you.